Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
There we go. At 109, this is John. Well, it's not hard to think big thoughts today. Good Lord, what's going on? So Sean Spicer is out. The Blackhawks convention is in. O.J. Simpson is free. And somebody just bought a bag of rocks for almost $2 million. That's the world you and I live in today. We'll talk about a little bit of all of that in the next couple of hours.
I'm sorry, I got something else going. What was that question?
You ask me something?
What's that?
No, hold on. You talking to me, Ryan?
I'm sorry about that. No.
Okay, I'm turning Ryan off because I don't think Ryan realizes he's still on the air with us. So check on that, will you, Olive? Because I don't want him to start cussing the way he does and regrets the fact that he's still on WGN. Okay, so there you got Sean Spicer. And it's funny because the story that I'm reading about Sean Spicer stepping down, the first story I saw was from Glenn Thrush, New York Times, boo. Whenever I see Glenn Thrush's name, I think of Melissa McCarthy doing Sean Spicer. Glenn Thrush. They would always call him in on those SNL send-ups of the Sean Spicer press briefings. So the Glenn Thrush story in part says, Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, has resigned this morning, Friday, telling President Trump he vehemently disagrees with the appointment of New York financier Anthony Scaramucci as the communications director. So Spicer steps down. And I posted on Facebook about this today, and I said what I did a moment ago, and I suspect you agree too, that Sean Spicer had an impossible job. He hadn't been doing it lately. We all know him as the voice and face of the administration in those press briefings. Now Sarah Huckabee Sanders does them, but really you do think about Spicer in that role, don't you? And when you think about him, I wonder what you think. Because I think there is a guy who had an impossible job to do. I don't think he did it very well. I think it was miserable work, but somebody had to do it. I've run into a disagreement at times with people like Eric Zorn and Christy McQuarrie and Steve Bertrand when we do our Mincing Rascals podcast, that little political roundtable. And I said that if you're Tillerson or if you're Reince Priebus or if you're Sean Spicer, if you're somebody that serves in the administration, I know there's a lot of ire that will be directed at you because that's a reflection of an unpopular president. And you'll sometimes be asked to do impossible or contradictory things. The president will say something and do something else, and you'll sometimes be caught in the middle. So it's kind of a thankless and very difficult job, and therefore will be super critical of you. Additionally, you will sometimes be asked to carry out policies that you know will be unpopular, that might even be against your own principles. But I've always said that the work of serving the presidency is honorable and you should do it as best you can. And so if you're Sean Spicer, for instance, and the president wants you to go out there and argue with the press about the size of the inaugural crowd, I think you have two options, don't you? You can either say, I'm not going to do it, or I am going to do it, right? If I am going to do it, I have to represent the president's views. And they may be cuckoo bananas. They may be at odds with reality, but I'm going to serve the presidency. Somebody has to articulate the feelings of the president to the American people. Somebody has to do that. And if everybody thinks, well, gee, this guy's a liar or he's a clown and I won't do it, then we'll lose that important conduit. So somebody's got to do that job. And Sean Spicer decided he'd give her a go. And so then we get mad at Sean Spicer. It's sort of like killing the messenger, right? I mean, really, what do you know about Spicer except that he was doing the president's will? Did he really personally think those things? You don't know. Is he a terrible guy? Everybody says before he got this job, he wasn't a bad guy. Now he's got the thankless job of representing the views of a cuckoo bananas president. So what are you going to do? But when you go back and listen to that very first press briefing, and actually it wasn't an official press briefing. I mean, literally, they were still rolling up the tarp on the inauguration ceremony, the famous white tarp that was laid out on the White House lawn or on the mall. So they're literally rolling that white tarp up. And the next day would be the official first White House press briefing with starring Sean Spicer. But before that, as everybody was, I don't even remember why we all got into such a big argument about the size of the crowds, except that it was a topic. People were posting pictures, including the National Park Service, saying, wow, look at the size of Obama's crowd. Look at the size of Donald Trump's crowd. And then we all got into a big argument about what that was and what that represented. And the president was crowing about what a great crowd it was, millions of people. And so then Sean Spicer came out and introduced us not just to Sean Spicer, but he introduced us to our future. In fact, if you needed a litmus test, a blueprint, if you needed to know something just for a minute about what the next 6 months were going to be like, this is what they were going to be like.
Thank you guys for coming. I know our first official press briefing is going to be on Monday, but I wanted to give you a few updates on the president's activities. But before I get to the news of the day, I think I'd like to discuss a little bit of the coverage of the past 24 hours. Yesterday, at a time when our nation and the world was watching the peaceful transition of power, and as the president said, the transition and the balance of power from Washington to the citizens of the United States, some members of the media were engaged in deliberately false reporting. For all the talk about the proper use of Twitter, two instances yesterday stand out. One was a particularly egregious example in which a reporter falsely tweeted out that the bust of Martin Luther King Jr. had been removed from the Oval Office. After it was pointed out that this was just plain wrong, the reporter casually reported and tweeted out and tried to claim that a Secret Service agent must have just been standing in front of it. This was irresponsible and reckless. Secondly, photographs of the inaugural proceedings were intentionally framed in a way, in one particular tweet, to minimize the enormous support that had gathered on the National Mall. This was the first time in our nation's history that floor coverings have been used to protect the grass in the mall. That had the effect of highlighting any areas where people were not standing, while in years past, the grass eliminated this visual. This was also the first time that fencing and magnetometers went as far back on the wall, preventing hundreds of thousands of people from being able to access the mall as quickly as they had in inaugurations past. Inaccurate numbers involving crowd size were also tweeted. No one had numbers because the National Park Service, which controls the National Mall, does not put any out. By the way, this applies to any attempts to try to count the number of protesters today in the same fashion. We do know a few things, so let's go through the facts. We know that from the platform where the president was sworn into 4th Street holds about 250,000 people. From 4th Street to the media tent is about another 220,000. And from the media tent to the Washington Monument, another 250,000 people. All of this space was full when the president took the oath of office. We know that 420,000 people used the D.C. Metro public transit yesterday, which actually compares to 317,000 that used it for President Obama's last inaugural. This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
And after that, we learned the phrase fact checkers, who had a field day with that. And, you know, regardless of what was true and what was not true, and a lot of what you just heard was not true, but you just automatically now have a sense of what it's going to be like. This is before the first press briefing. This is, if not an introduction of Sean Spicer to the press, it's an introduction of Sean Spicer and the voice and face of the administration to the American people. This is going to be your guy now. This is going to be how the president is going to present himself. And it's angry. And his hello to the United States is, we're really ticked about a particular tweet that said that the bust of Martin Luther King was moved. And another particular tweet cropped the photo so as to make it look like Trump's crowd was smaller. We now know that Trump's crowd was smaller. Pretty much all the photos show that. But they picked that fight that day. And you wonder, who wrote that? Did Sean Spicer write that? I mean, it was just remarkable. And kind of sad. Okay, so it's not just that, though. I mean, if you start to play Sean Spicer's greatest hits, let's do number two, Olive, and that is, you know, here again, you get the feeling sometimes that when Spicer has been saying things that were not true, it was him sometimes thinking badly on his feet. It was also sometimes him just trying to find a way to spin what his boss wanted spun.
You had a, you know, someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
He wants that one back. When people started to talk about the Russian connection, was there collusion? This is number three, Elif. This is one that I think Spicer just spun on his own and did it pretty well.
If the president puts Russian salad dressing on his salad tonight, somehow that's a Russian connection. But every single person, no, at some point, report the facts. The facts are that every single person who has been briefed on this subject has come away with the same conclusion. I'm sorry that that disgusts you. You're shaking your head. At some point, the facts are what they are. At some point, April, you're going to have to take no for an answer with respect to whether or not there was collusion.
Every day it was argumentative. Every day it was fact and then counterfactual. It was your point and our point. It was not healthy. I don't know that it's going to change with Sarah Huckabee Sanders going forward. Again, she's been doing it for a while now anyway. Oddly, today's press briefing was supposed to be televised. It hasn't happened yet. Ryan, I'm looking at you right now. She's not on yet, is she?
She is not on yet. We've got, let me fade up a little bit of what we've got. They're just about to do a press briefing right now. So everyone's in the room, but the podium's empty.
And that it would be televised today for the first time in about a month was just coincidence?
I don't think so. There was a lot that happened. And if you listen to the report that we wrote, ran earlier, I know you were prepping for the show, but Jonathan Carl said that when all of this was going down, he tried to ask Sean Spicer just outside of his office, hey, is this real? Is there really a change in leadership? And he literally got the door slammed in his face by Spicer. He said if he had been an inch closer, it would have probably broken his nose. He says Jonathan Carl's been around. He says he's never seen anything quite like that before. So there definitely was a little bit of emotion running through that communication department when all this was going down.
Now, Melissa McCarthy's going to have to find new work. In fact, some of her greatest hits coming up.
Glenn Thrush, New York Times. Boo! Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the travel ban on Muslims.
Yeah, it's not a ban.
I'm sorry?
It's not a ban. The travel ban is not a ban, which makes it not a ban.
But you just called it a ban.
Because I'm using your words. You said ban.
And on it went. On Facebook, you can like me there. I'm King John. I asked you what your take on Sean Spicer is. Among the comments, not as reviled as Sarah Huckabee Sanders is by many. About Sean Spicer, Linda said he needs to do SNL now. Boy, I wonder if he is going to pop up that way. I mean, what a relief it must be for him. Maybe it was his dream job. Maybe he's sad about it. But in some, you know, tomorrow morning he's going to get up and go, wow, I don't have to do that. That has to, I don't know how he's going to pay his bills. Maybe he'll get some money for a book. Boy, in fact, some of you said, boy, he needs to write a book. John, I felt bad for him, but he had little backbone. Robert Mueller needs to depose Sean Spicer ASAP. Shirley said, I felt bad for him.
Hey, John, can I interrupt? It looks like we're starting to get some movement here with the press briefing. Sarah Huckabee Sanders just reading a statement right now from the president on the resignation of Sean Spicer.
We have accomplished so much, and we're being given credit for so little. The good news is the people get it, even if the media doesn't. And I'd like to bring Anthony up to say a few words and take a few questions. As always, I'll be back after that to answer any follow-up questions. So.
Thank you very much.
So I'm going to be very brief. I'm going to make my remarks informal, and then I'll take questions from everybody. First off, I'd like to announce formally that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to be the president. Oh, you can't hear me. I'm sorry. Better?
Oh, this
Sarah
is
Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to be the press secretary.
Okay, this is the new communications director now, Anthony.
Session. Still can't hear me, no sound.
This is Scaramucci.
Scaramucci, yeah, correct.
Better, better now, better now. I'm going to start over. You guys heard me in the front, though, right? What did I say, John? Sarah's going to be the press secretary, right? Okay, so congratulations to you, Sarah. And so I want to make a couple of statements. The first thing I want to say is I want to thank personally Sean Spicer, not only on behalf of myself, the president, the administration, but Sean is a true American patriot. He's a military serviceman. He's got a great family. And he's done an amazing job. This is obviously a difficult situation to be in. And I applaud his efforts here. And I love the guy. And I wish him well. And I hope he goes on to make a tremendous amount of money. As it relates to me in this position, I'm going to spend a couple of weeks getting to know the people here. And I'm going to be as coordinated as I can with the people inside the West Wing. There's been some speculation in the press about me and Reince, so I just want to talk about that very quickly. Reince and I have been personal friends for 6 years. We are a little bit like brothers, where we rough each other up once in a while, which is totally normal for brothers. There's a lot of people in here that have brothers, and so you get that. But he's a dear friend. He brought me into the political system. He brought me into the Republican National Committee network. He introduced me to Governor Walker. We've spent many times together socially. A lot of people are not aware about this, but after the Romney campaign, I invited Reince into Skybridge. I think it reflects poorly on Reince that he didn't take my offer to come in and be our chief operating officer. But I say that in jest, obviously. And so what I want you guys to know is that he was my first call this morning. I met with him before we sat in the Oval Office, and we are committed as true professionals to the team and the process of getting the administration's message out. And I think that's going to be one of the big goals for us. I said during the transition, and I'll say it up here, I think there's been at times a disconnect between the way we see the president and how much we love the president and the way some of you perhaps see the president. And I certainly see the American people probably see the president the way I do. But we want to get that message out there.
While Scaramucci talks, we'll pause here for just a minute. We've got the news coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll go back to his remarks if they're still going on. And also Sarah Huckabee Sanders' comments, if she takes questions from the crowd, maybe from the press, maybe he will as well. That's coming up here on WGN. This is John Williams. I've been listening to the press briefing. Scaramucci says a couple of interesting things. They asked him if the cameras will be back on, as they are today. He said that essentially that's going to be up to Sarah. He says, I don't know, maybe. One of the members of the press then asked this question, does the president know in 2015 you called him a hack politician? Scaramucci says, yes, he reminds me of that every single day. It happened in 2015. I was an inexperienced person. I apologized to the president, and you know, we're cool with that. They said, will you, to the best of your ability, present accurate information to us? He said, I shouldn't have to answer that question. And yet the press was asking about the credibility of the press briefings. And he said, we will do so to the best of our ability. He's still talking.
And I'm here to serve him, and I'm here to serve the people inside the West Wing.
Just to follow up on John's question, are you committed then to regular televised briefings and having a transparent relationship with the press?
Okay. And again, I obviously am committed to being transparent because I'm standing here, but I'd like to talk that over with the president, and we have a new press secretary. I'd like to talk it over with her. And then we'll get back to you on that. But I, you know, listen, you know, I'm standing right here. I'm going to try to answer every question. Sarah, go ahead.
So two quick questions. The first one, obviously, you know, the president has been feeling under siege with the Russia investigations, both at the Department of Justice, but also on the Hill. Do you feel like he was feeling exposed? He didn't have people adequately coming to his defense? Is that part of the reason that we have you here today?
No, I don't think so. So one of the things that I'm doing today is I sort of didn't have my White House counsel briefing before I'm having the press briefing. So I want to limit my remarks related to the Russia situation and things like that. But here's what I tell you about the president. He's the most competitive person I've ever met. Okay, I've seen this guy throw a dead spiral through a tire. I've seen him at Madison Square Garden with a top coat on. He's standing in the key and he's hitting foul shots and swishing them. Okay, he sinks 3-foot putts. I don't see this guy as a guy that's ever under siege. This is a very, very competitive person. Obviously, there's a lot of incoming that comes into the White House, but the president's a winner. Okay, and what we're going to do is we're going to do a lot of winning.
One other question, just in terms of the relationship that this press operation has had with news outlets. I mean, they've made a habit of calling news outlets they don't like fake news, calling stories they don't like fake news, calling errors that were then corrected, you know, using that as an example to call entire news outlets fake news. Is that the kind of relationship you want with media outlets? What kind,
so,
how do you
so
envision
let me,
relationship?
Again, I want to speak for myself right now because I don't, it's my first day on the job. I got to get familiar with everybody, get direction from the president. but I had a personal incident with your news organization, and I thought I handled it well. You guys said something about me that was totally unfair and untrue. You retracted it and issued me an apology, and I accepted the apology immediately. And so for me, I've never been a journalist, but I have played a journalist on television. I used to host Wall Street Week for Fox Business. And so I have empathy for journalists in terms of sometimes they're going to get stories wrong. But I sort of don't like the fake news. And if you said to me that there's some media bias out there, if you want me to be as candid as I would like to be with you guys, there feels like there's a little bit of media bias. And so what we hope we can do is de-escalate that and turn that around. And let's let the message from the president get out there to the American people. Yes. Really going to try to get there. How are you doing?
Anthony Scaramucci, of course, is the guy that CNN did a not well fact-checked story about. They got it wrong. Remember, three of the senior members of the CNN staff resigned or were asked to resign. CNN apologized. They apologized to him. He accepted the apology, said no big deal, and everybody moved on. It was one of those rare instances where the media got it wrong, the offended person didn't make a mountain out of a molehill, and the media self-corrected very quickly on that story. That was Anthony Scaramucci they were talking about. That's him there. And we'll continue to listen in here and report back to you more about that press briefing. This is the first one with him. He's not going to obviously do them regularly. Sarah Huckabee Sanders will now be that. Sean Spicer's completely out of the Trump administration. And Scaramucci speaking today, he said just to sort of introduce himself, and then he'll wait and get further direction from the president on things like, will these press briefings be televised again? This is the rare one now. In that it is televised today. And how in the world does Sean Hannity get Spicer, Reince Priebus, and is it Scaramucci that's also coming
Correct.
On tonight?
Correct, yes.
Now, that must have been previously scheduled, too. But Spicer quits in a huff over this. Scaramucci kind of glosses over it, as is his wont. He should. But, I mean, I wonder if they're all three going to appear there and how that will be. I'm not working for Sean Hannity. And remember, the last time he had somebody on and was going to ask the tough questions, he completely punted on Donald Trump Jr. He said, I'm going to ask every single question I can think of. And Sean Hannity did not ask, so how many people were in that room? Didn't come to him that day. So we'll see how it goes tonight. It's 1:44. You know, the Blackhawks convention is this weekend. Boy, if you want an escape from all of that, think about this. We've been having fun with that here on WGN Radio, talking to the staff and coaches, the ownership, management, and certainly the players. And I get my turn in just a minute. We will visit with, boy, I hope I get this name right, John Hayden, H-A-Y-D-E-N, new to the team last year, had his first goal in March, and he'll say hello to us in a couple of minutes here on WGN.
Okay. And are you willing to say you've made a mistake? Okay. So two questions right there.
Well, listen, I took trial advocacy at Harvard Law School, a little name dropping there if you don't mind, okay? And so I'm not going to answer that because that's a hypothetical, and the first thing they teach you in trial advocacy is not to answer a hypothetical. But here's what I will tell you, okay? I love the president, and the president is a very, very effective communicator, and he'll use social media. I think he's got a
give the press credit. They're not giving him a honeymoon, and I think Scaramucci's responses have been actually pretty good. Although somebody reminded me just about the whole Trump administration, the whole daily press briefing, et cetera. If you elect a clown, you get a circus. And when they asked him, are you going to try to right the ship? He said, actually, I resent the question. We're doing a fine job. We just need to clarify our message a little bit. So our best to them. I mean, at least that's my attitude, because that is our president. That is our White House communications director communicating the office of the presidency to us. You only want that to go well, right? It's 1:48. So they got a great weekend downtown Chicago for the Blackhawks convention. Have you made plans to go over there? Were you lucky enough to get tickets? This is John Hayden, one of the newer Blackhawks players. He just finished a four-year playing career at Yale. Speaking of dropping Ivy League school names here, he's taking summer classes, I understand, to graduate as well from Yale. And one of five Blackhawks to make his NHL debut last season, and one of seven to score his first goal. John, this is John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show, and sort of welcome back to Chicago. Oh, come on, Johnny boy, be there for me. Hey, John, are you there? That's up. He's not hearing us. Oh, come on, that was such a nice introduction. Ryan, do you want to impersonate John Hayden?
No.
Yeah, excellent.
It could be retribution.
What was that?
I don't want there to be retribution if I don't do it right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What if you say, really, I wear girl skates and
exactly.
I can't skate backwards.
Yeah, those guys have sticks, you know. We'll mess with them.
All right. Well, we'll try. Should we try it again, Elif? Should we put that line up again? Okay. Let's try it one more time. Hey, John, this is John Williams. You're on WGN, I hope. Are you there?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Hey, now we got you on. John, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great, thank you. How are you?
Well, good. Welcome to Chicago. Although, you know, you've obviously been to Chicago before. You had a brief stint with the Blackhawks last year. What was the date that you came up? When did you actually join the club?
My Yale season ended in March, so I was there in Chicago through from the middle of March through April to the playoffs. And that was obviously an incredible experience leaving school and joining the team.
Does that happen usually? Guys play 4 years at a college and then go directly from that team. You would see this maybe with an NFL player, but does that happen with NHL players, 4 years in college and then directly to the pro club?
Well, obviously in the NHL, there's such a prevalence of players who played major, junior, and players from Europe. And then with college players, it really depends. Some players only need 1 year of college, and I thought it was in my best interest to stay for 4 years, develop there. I was fortunate to be in a leadership position at Yale. So really, as a hockey player and as a person, I think staying was in my best interest, and I'm very grateful for the 4 years at Yale.
Are you working on your degree? Have you finished that? What are you studying at Yale?
I actually received my degree in political science. Fortunately, I was able to finish all of my classes from the ropes. My professors stayed in touch, knew I was in Chicago, so I did attend graduation and get my degree.
Wow. So I'm sorry, did you graduate yet, or do you have your degree now?
No, I do. Yeah, I'm officially graduated.
Wow. Well, political science. So, you know, a lot of guys, when they leave their playing days, I mean, down the road, 10, 15, 20 years from now, when you finally hang up your skates, do you want to be a sports announcer? Would you like to be a political analyst on WGN Radio here?
That definitely sounds like a good option, so maybe keep me in your thoughts till then.
Yeah, okay. I won't press your second career. Let's just wish you well in this one. How excited are you about the team this season? How optimistic are you?
I'm very excited and I'm very optimistic. I think having 12 or 13 games of experience, including the playoffs, was enough motivation for me this summer. And I'm trying to address all the areas of improvement for me personally. I think the team's going to be in a great position next year, and obviously some exciting trades. So all in all, I'm excited, and I'm also optimistic. So I think this team always has a chance of winning, especially with the core and the leadership they have here.
Maybe if you play 4 years at Yale and you're a member of the Blackhawks, your first goal in the NHL isn't as memorable as it might be for somebody else, but maybe it is. Do you remember that March 18th goal, your first one for the Blackhawks last year?
Yeah, I actually do. So I repeat that question. I think I lost it there.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, you're kind of cutting in and out. I was wondering how well you recollected your first goal.
Oh, wow. That was a special moment. I do remember that because I had family there in Toronto at the Air Canada Center. Obviously, it's special to be playing a line with Jonathan Toews, and that was the case for that goal. So I'll remember that moment for a while, and I really cherish that.
Wow. You know who's really going to remember that goal for a while is your family. I mean, think about that. Too bad it wasn't at the United Center, but your family's in the stands. You're on the ice with Jonathan Toews. You score your first goal. I mean, can you imagine what a thrill that must have been for them?
Yeah, it was definitely special. My family's done such an amazing job supporting me the last few years. So to have them there and to have them at my first game in Ottawa and also at the United Center for my first couple of games there was really special.
Now, were you born in Chicago? Did you grow up in Chicago at all? Because I've got you in Chicago, but also in Connecticut. Where have you spent most of your time?
I was born in Chicago, but moved right away to Denver. Lived there for 8 years, and I've been in Greenwich, Connecticut ever since. I had a 2-year stint in Ann Arbor for the national team development program, and obviously in New Haven for 4 years at Yale. But I consider Greenwich, Connecticut my home.
I got it. You know, you're a little bit like me. I was born in Chicago and then moved away and then came back many years later. So there's this gap where you really, if you don't grow up in Chicago, you miss a couple of things. But it's kind of neat that you're back. So I just got a couple of Chicago things you need to know. Do you have a number two pencil or any way to write some notes down here?
Yeah, I'll write this down.
Okay, yeah, you will. All right, so John Hayden, here's just a few things you need to know now that you're back in Chicago. Or maybe I'll just ask you as a question. Do you put ketchup on a hot dog, yes or no?
Yes.
No, you do not put ketchup on a hot dog. Oh, gee, John, right out of the gate, you got the first one wrong. Here in Chicago, we only put mustard on our hot dogs. If they see you put ketchup on a hot dog, it's over. They're going to trade you, I promise. Don't put ketchup on a hot dog. Have you got that?
I got it.
Okay. The city's favorite sport. Ryan, maybe you can help this young man out. What would you say Chicago's hometown sport is?
Baseball.
Baseball. Yeah, I'd say, here's what I'm thinking. 16-inch softball. 16-inch softball. So write that down next to mustard. 16-inch softball is our game. And here's just one more fact. Drop this on Taves or Kane or some of those guys, because I'll bet they don't know it, and you now will, so you'll be more of a Chicagoan than them. Chicago, the word Chicago means stinky onions. I'll bet Jonathan Taves doesn't know that. So
I'll definitely ask him tonight.
I don't know how you pop that up in the question. Maybe you guys are sitting there eating dinner and you've got onions on your sandwich. You'll find a way to weave it in, right?
I will. I definitely will stay far away from ketchup for my career.
Yes, really. I'm just here to help. That's all. So just tell me, I got a couple more minutes and then I'll let you get back to the convention. Are you signing autographs? Is there a day or a time for people to bump into you, John?
Yeah, there is. Today, I think I have a picture session tomorrow, an autograph session, and really events throughout the weekend, which is exciting because obviously this is a 10th convention, so there's been a ton of success with these events, and this is my first. I'm excited to interact with fans because that's probably the most special part of my first experience in Chicago was playing at the United Center and seeing how passionate these fans were. So I'm excited, and this should be a great weekend.
Yeah, you know about how passionate Blackhawks fans are, but this is your first convention. Have you ever seen so many sweaters in one place at one time? It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Very amazing, yeah. I could tell just walking into the hotel that this is a unique city with a ton of passion and obviously a winning culture, so it's great to be here.
Yeah. Have a lot of fun. Have a great and successful career. Don't put ketchup on a hot dog. Chicago means stinky onions, and 16-inch softball is maybe Chicago's hometown sport. You just do all of that, and you'll be fine, all right?
Well, hey, I appreciate all the advice, and I'm going to make sure to talk to Kinger about that Chicago meeting tonight. So thank you.
Report,
it was awesome talking to you.
Report back to us. John, good luck to you. Thanks for your time. Have a great weekend, okay?
Yeah, dude. Take care, guys.
John Hayden, one of the newer members of the Chicago Blackhawks, born here, not raised here, back here. That's all good.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
There we go. That press briefing, by the way, the White House press briefing starring Sarah Huckabee Sanders,
Lord have mercy,
is still going on. She is still answering questions, and it's kind of like they're starting all over again. Everybody's asking about the rules of engagement. There's very little substantive things. I mean, you know, they're not talking about the health bill or the tax bill or even the Russian investigation. They are sort of tiptoeing around some of those things, you know, asking brief little questions, and then she'll give some sort of response. But mostly they're interested in how are you guys going to conduct business? Will the press briefings be televised? Do we take as gospel what the president tweets? Will you be as honest with us as you can, which, you know, suggests that maybe representing the president makes that difficult to do? I'll try not to laugh when I say that. And then there's a few other things that they've asked about as well, including, I thought this is a fascinating question, they asked about, will the president consider pardoning his kids or family members or members of his staff if necessary down the road? And evidently the president has inquired about that. I'm not clear on whether or not the president is interested in the power to pardon himself someday, but clearly he's sort of asked a little bit about that. And she said this many times, those sorts of things need to go to special counsel. We're here to represent the office of the president and the things the president does, you know, legislation. But about the Russian investigation or all of these private lawyers that they have representing them now, you need to bring that up with them. And that's probably the best place for it, I guess. but folks are very interested in that give and take. Lord knows it's been must-see TV, and she's sort of brushing all of that aside. It's interesting because more than twice during that press briefing, or at least twice that I heard, they referred to how good the TV viewership was for the Sean Spicer press briefings, as though that's either funny or a good thing, as if a slow train wreck is actually better than no train wreck at all. But that's why people were watching it. And I don't know that it was really funny, or I don't know if it's right to make a joke about it, but I wouldn't take that as a compliment. People didn't tune it in to go, boy, let's watch a very well-presented defensive or presentation of the president's thoughtful views. That is not why people were watching.
They wanted to see a Jerry Springer mess.
They got it a lot. Yeah. Oh, boy, they got it a lot. Look, Josh Earnest, who had the best name for a White House press secretary ever, and was voted by members of the press as the most popular press secretary, which also could be a bit of a double-edged sword, too, if you think about it. But he did fine. He was glib. Sometimes they were tough on him. Sometimes he was tough on them. But it was just this sort of, everybody's on the same playing field, and here's the information. You ask your questions. And you know what? It was kind of boring. It did not get good ratings. In fact, you never watched one of those. I didn't play sound bites from them. But now I've got a highlight reel that runs 2.5 hours. So Sean Spicer, Reince Priebus, and Anthony Scaramucci are going to be on with Sean Hannity tonight, and he's going to ask some really tough questions like, where do you get your shirts and stuff like that. We'll see how it goes.
We know that the president mentioned Sean Hannity many times. He's a big fan of the show.
Scaramucci said that, we wish Sean Spicer well, and we hope he makes a lot of money. I was wondering about that. I wonder how profitable, how marketable Sean Spicer can be now.
Let's keep in mind, though, he remains technically on staff, at least according to his tweet, until August. So this interview that we see tonight may not be a scorched earth, kind of burn it up, let all the secrets fly kind of thing. Remember, all of them are supposed to be there, so the more and more you read into it, it sounds like they will play nice. But we'll see.
Wouldn't it be awesome, though, if Hannity actually asked a probing question, and then Spicer just kind of looks left, looks right, kind of undoes his tie a little bit, kind of sits up in his seat and says, well, let me tell you, Sean, here's the goods. Holy cow! I would immediately call my family and friends and say, find Fox News now! Spicer just leans in and goes, okay. I've been wanting... Here's the beginning of a sentence you will not hear. Thanks, Sean. I've been meaning to say this for 6 months now, comma. You're not going to get that first half of a sentence. But, oh, would that be a swell sentence if it was? I'm interested, for instance, at the times where he had to go out there and say things that were ridiculous and impossible, like the inauguration crowd was the biggest ever, or Hitler didn't gas the Jews, or whatever it was that he was going to say. I wonder what it was like backstage. Somebody had to be writing out the bullet points or literally the script that he would read. So who would that be and how would that go?
And then watch it all play out in comedy version on Saturday Night Live with Melissa McCarthy playing you.
Yeah,
Think about if someone watched your show or listened to your show and then did a spoof on it, how that would make you feel. Because it's constantly being asked about him, constantly being thrown in his face, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, it would make you feel very self-conscious about everything you wrote, too. You know that if you're going to do a quip or a joke or a line, that if it doesn't go well, and even if it does, it's going to come back to you in spades. Saturday Night Live was just sitting there watching and writing as Sean Spicer wrote their scripts, for crying out loud. Listen, I've said today, I don't know how you feel about it, Ryan, but I've got a little sympathy for the man. I don't know him. I think he does a difficult task. And I for instance, I like Ryan Burrow. Suppose Ryan Burrow took the job of spokesperson for the president. If he did, would I then like Ryan Burrow afterwards? Because I would say, oh, gee, that guy's up there saying things I don't want to hear, or he's saying them in a way I don't like. And then you think that that's a reflection of Ryan. But it's not. Ryan's a good guy. He's just doing the impossible over here.
And it's not just, I mean, we've got PR people all over the country who have to defend companies, who have to defend celebrities.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know,
right.
I mean, it's not just at the White House. Now, there they've got 37 cameras, you know, on them at all times. But, yeah, that's a tough job no matter what. Can you imagine being the PR person for O.J. Simpson?
Absolutely.
Justin Bieber right now? I mean.
Wait, no, what did Justin Bieber
do? No, not specifically in this moment, but with some of the goofball things that he's done in the past, you know, trying to smooth them over. And, you know, companies, Exxon, the oil spill, BP oil spill.
Think
There's
of the tobacco
one.
Guys.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
If you were an attorney working for a tobacco company, I'll bet you're a good guy. You got good grades. You went to law school. You've got a nice family and kids. And people judge you because of the job that you have, and that's not always fair.
Baghdad Bob, right?
Baghdad Bob was the guy that I'm thinking of somebody, maybe not the same guy you're thinking of. Who is Baghdad
he
Bob?
He was the one who represented the Saddam Hussein, right? He
right.
would come out and essentially say, no,
we're winning.
Everything's fine. We're winning the war.
Yes, I know. While in the backdrop, you could actually see towers toppling over. You could see our troops storming the
gates.
And
you had a feeling he had a guy with a gun to his back, too.
Yeah,
you know, go out there and say this.
Yeah, I know. Baghdad Sean. Bill Leff asked this morning, he said, I wonder if O.J. Simpson could get a job. And this is apples and oranges. I promise you I know. But I'm just wondering the same thing. What kind of a job could Sean Spicer get now? I'm sure he could work for a conservative think tank. He could work for the Republican Party, I suppose. There's innumerable jobs out there that people would hire him for. Because a lot of people think that he either did a good job or he was trying to do a good job. And then there are a number of other people. I mean, can you imagine if you were Exxon or the Tribune Company, or I don't know, pick a big company, and you're a new spokesperson, your new guy was Sean Spicer. You know, you just don't want to borrow that baggage, even if you have faith in him. Even if he could do the job, so could somebody else. So I don't think you give him that job.
He's got a military background, too. So this hasn't been his first job. I mean, he's done a lot with services and various things across the country. So I'm sure he'll land on his feet.
Let's play track 7 there, Elif. Cut 7. This is a couple of you on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. I posted his first interaction with the press when he famously defended the president's view on the size of the crowd at the inauguration. It was a man in a bad suit saying that the round peg goes into the square hole. And so he's up there. We posted that video. And then I gave my thoughts about Sean Spicer's impossible task. And I asked you how you feel about him. And a lot of you are commenting down below. I'm King John on Facebook. You can like me there. But a couple of you said, poor Melissa McCarthy, what's she going to do now?
All right, let me just put this whole Russian thing to bed once and for all.
Oh, is that all we have of that? I thought that cut was going to go longer.
No, that's it.
Oh, that's not long enough.
That's all we have the rights to, John. I'm sorry.
That should be much longer than that. Well, let's see if cut 6, since we've played a little of this earlier, but at least we can hear it for its comedic value a little longer. How about track 6?
Glenn Thrush, New York Times. Boo! Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the travel ban on Muslims.
Yeah, it's not a ban.
I'm sorry?
It's not a ban. The travel ban is not a ban, which makes it not a ban.
But you just called it a ban.
Because I'm using your words. You said ban.
And you know, that sounds hilarious and crazy. A lot of times, that was exactly what happened from the podium. And hopefully, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to be able to avoid painting herself in a corner with some of those words. That was very, very strange. Hey, thanks also to John Hayden from the Blackhawks for coming on our show a little while ago. We were able to sort of pigeonhole him in between some of the other news that's been breaking today. I started to give him what I thought would be some easy questions, Ryan, about Chicago, so that if he's going to be a Chicagoan now, this will be his first full season with the Blackhawks. He needs to know a few basic things like you put mustard on hot dogs, not ketchup. I got that right? That was solid advice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that our city's sport is 16-inch softball. We love all our teams, but if you said, what's Chicago's homegrown sport? It's 16-inch softball, don't
sure,
you think?
Sure, absolutely.
Play with the clincher softball. That's a very, very Chicagoan.
We should have warned him not to drive on the Kennedy. Don't start in the afternoon if you're going to come in for a game because it's going to take forever.
I could have given him some traffic tips.
Yeah.
Elif suggested that we tell him that LSD here means Lakeshore Drive. You know, just so if somebody brings that up.
He doesn't have to freak out when people tell him to take it.
You need to be informed. They go, take LSD. And you go, no, I can't. Yes, you can. Here we do take LSD. And it's lovely. The zipper was invented in Chicago. A lot of things were invented or started in Chicago. The zipper, the Ferris wheel, the very first Ferris wheel, was for the Chicago Exposition in 1893.
Mr. Ferris made it.
Yes, that's right. And Ferris was the guy, didn't he invent the Eiffel Tower too?
No. They wanted to compete with the Eiffel Tower. One of the guy who made the Eiffel Tower had his own submission, but they denied that.
Okay, so Ferris, though.
But, you know, there is a guy named Ferris who also skipped out of school one day and ran amok around Chicago. He should probably watch that.
Yeah, that's right. If I said, and really, if you're going to start quoting movies, you need to be able to quote Blues Brothers and Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
The Picasso.
A couple
you know?
Of others, right. The whole scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Twinkie was invented in Chicago. The vacuum cleaner came from Chicago. Deep dish pizza did. I was going to tell him where to go, but actually that would be bad advice. If I said Geno's and you said Malnati's and you said someplace in your neighborhood, then
I'm sure Coach Q has some places for him to go.
I don't think there's a wrong answer there. Yeah. Just order deep dish pizza. I was going to ask him this one, but actually I think this is kind of tough. What do the four stars on the Chicago flag stand for? You think you can answer that one, Mr. Chicago, over there?
Well, first of all, I live in Palatine, but I'll do the best. Fort Dearborn.
One.
Columbian Exposition.
Two.
The World's Fair that came in.
Century of Progress.
Yeah,
three.
Century of Progress.
The last one's the easy one.
Chicago Fire.
Ta-da. Good. Look at you.
Thank you.
Look at you.
Thank you. Been refreshing my my tour by Mr. Joliet and Mr. Marquette. By the way, I don't know if you've... Have you ever noticed that plaque they've got there on the Michigan Avenue Bridge where they came in, where they entered with canoes?
Yeah.
There's and they discovered the Chicago... Yeah, and they discovered
Joliet
Chicago.
Joliet Marquette? Yeah. There's a spot literally where they came by?
Yeah, they had to... You know, this whole area where we are right now used to be all swamps. Used to be all swampy area. You probably would have to take a canoe.
Right.
There were no streets. There were no anything. It was just swampy area.
Well, I'll tell you, in fact, lines at the Walgreens and the Starbucks were terrible because you had all these canoes...
It's true.
Backed all the way up to the lake.
They were looking for the Mississippi River. They found it.
Speaking of that, I'll just give you one other one. Four states are visible from the top of Willis Tower. Name the four. Ready, go.
Wisconsin.
One.
Indiana.
Two.
Iowa.
No.
Ooh, Michigan. Did I say Michigan? Michigan.
Start again.
All right, Michigan.
Four states are visible from the top of the Willis Tower.
All right, Michigan.
One.
Indiana.
Two.
Illinois.
Ta-da.
Wisconsin.
Yes, Illinois is kind of a trick question. Actually, this is weird. Arizona is also visible from the top of the Willis Tower. And that's just kind of a fluke of nature there.
You ever been to Four Corners before?
No, I have not. That'd be kind of fun.
No, it literally is just four corners. I'll save you. It's a big thing that you stand on and you're in four states at one time. There's really nothing more to it than that.
I want to do that. I've always thought that would be fun.
It's not worth a trip, okay? Maybe if you're driving through, it's fine, but
get
don't make a vacation out of
don't
it.
Don't make
yet.
It a point, yeah. The first air-conditioned office building was here in Chicago. The Wrigley Building was the first building with air conditioning. It's 221. Everybody's talked about O.J. Simpson. It was on this show yesterday that the parole board, 4-0, and it had to be unanimous, or at least it did for those four. It was complicated if all four of them didn't agree. There still would have been a way that he could have been paroled, but he got the four, and so O.J. Simpson, live on this radio show yesterday, was paroled. And then everybody's been talking about it since. There's a couple of takeaways to think about from the O.J. Simpson story. And one, I think, has been missed. And I just want to mention that in a minute here on GM. Speaking of the Cubs these days, you know, they have that little park at Wrigley Field now, that green space down the third baseline, you know, where the parking lot, McDonald's and all that used to be over there. Now they've got the hotel. And between the hotel and Wrigley Field on the, I guess, east side of Clark, they have that little green triangle. And now that I spend a lot of time over there, I'm amazed at how much that little spot of grass gets used. They have concerts there. They show movies there, and people lay out their blankets like they're at Millennium or Grant Park. It's not much space. They have a farmer's market there. They have company functions there. Kids play ball there. It's got to be, per square inch, some of the most used and enjoyed and really pretty. It's just delightful grass there is in the city of Chicago. And if you haven't been up there lately, it's not brand new, but I've been spending some time, and it's just neat to see how much it gets used. The other night, Brenda and I walked over there, and they were showing Ferris Bueller's Day Off on a big screen above it, there's there's the Brick House now. It's a brew pub or a kind of a burger and beer joint. And then they've got the Starbucks there, and they've got the Jostens where you can buy Cubs jewelry and a Cubs store. And on the second floor of all that, they've got a giant TV. Ryan Sandberg was there the other night being interviewed on the big screen. And then they introduced Ferris Bueller, and everybody hung out and watched it. It's just kind of a free thing. And I just think it's positively delightful. I'm looking at this list of things about Chicago. The first automobile race ever was in Chicago. The first cell phone was in Chicago. And Ryan, this will be the last one I ask you before you get ready for the news over there.
All right.
The longest Major League Baseball game to ever be played was in Chicago. How much of that can you tell me about? Teams, location, innings, year.
Was this the Cubs-Phillies, the 23-inning game?
That's what I'm thinking of. It's not. Or any of those epic Cubs-Phillies games. It seemed like the Cubs and Phillies had a bunch of games in the 70s. Where the score was 27-49. Dave Kingman hit 12 home runs.
Now you got some fake news going on here. There's no 49 runs.
So the longest MLB game to ever be played was in 1984.
That was a good year for the Cubs.
At Comiskey.
Oh.
It was the Brewers and the White Sox. The White Sox won. I don't have the score. The game went 25 innings. I don't know if that stretched over 2 days or not. I'll bet it did. Longest MLB game ever to be played was in 1984. Sox beat the Brewers at Comiskey in 25 innings.
There is a great book out there, and I can't remember the author's name right now, but it's about a minor league game that went 33 innings long.
Wow.
And it featured Cal Ripken Jr. and Wade Boggs. They were playing against each other in the minors, and it happened the night before before Easter. And they didn't know what to do. They just kept playing and playing, and no one would score the winning run.
I wonder if at some point you say, you know what, it's just a game. Let's just, fine, lob them in there.
They couldn't get a hold of the commissioner because it was the night before Easter.
Oh, you mean like literally they wanted to quit,
and they kept playing. The umpires didn't know what to do.
What's the commissioner doing, coloring Easter eggs? He can't be bothered on the night before Easter?
I guess. The commissioner of minor league baseball. He's got stuff to do, you know?
It's 2:27. So the bright side of life and a few recommendations from us after the news in just a minute. I just did want to say this because Justin Kaufman did a really good show last night here about O.J. Simpson, said that he doesn't have much time or place for it. Bill Leff and Wendy did have a little more time and place for it today. When I think about O.J. Simpson and what's happened now that he's a free man and everybody's sort of resetting their O.J. clocks, because I do think he's going to do something stupid. I don't think he's capable of behaving. Even at the age of 70, that doesn't give you wisdom. I think OJ is ultimately proof that our legal system works. And I think that's a little ironic, isn't it? Because you think of OJ as the failure of our legal system. But I think about OJ Simpson this way. In America, if you can't prove to a jury of someone's peers that they're guilty, even if everybody knows they are guilty, then that person goes free. It's not a perfect system, but it's fair. And not everybody gets fair treatment in this country. I understand that. But I think O.J. Simpson is proof of how it can work and literally how it should work in the case of the murder trial. That O.J. was found not guilty and that we abided by that, that we let him go, you know, instead of saying, well, we don't care. We know you're guilty, so lock him up anyway or shoot him. But we said, no, you get to go play golf now. That's ultimately a good thing. It's a lesson that a lot of us could stand to learn. I'm thinking of the president, but really I'm thinking about all of us, that you don't get to change the outcome or the rules or the judges if you don't like the way it's going. Sometimes you lose, sometimes you win. And we all have to abide by that. And O.J. Simpson is proof of that. His second conviction seemed like payback, you know, in the aggravated armed robbery and kidnapping charge. But the parole hearing seemed right, too, didn't it? And afterwards, he's smug and he's rambling and he reminds you that he can be unlikable. But that's all beside the point. These are the rules. We're all playing by them. And son of a gun, if O.J. Simpson is not free again. And when I think about O.J.'s arc, what's a takeaway from the O.J. Simpson story? It's that, in fact, our legal system is something we can be proud of. It is as fair as we can make it be. It is as just, anyway, as we can make it be. Harry Tynewitz, ready to do the beat on the weekend. In fact, are you going to be doing the show from the Blackhawks convention this weekend, Harry?
Yes, John. We'll be there tomorrow from 3 to 7. Patrick Sharp, Denny Spark, Tony Esposito among the guests.
Boy, I've heard of some of those guys. Good show.
Yeah, well, I'll try my hardest to ruin it, but yeah, it should be a fun show.
What? Why are you calling, man? What's up?
Well, I'm driving along listening to my favorite show, and I heard you talking about the 25-inning White Sox-Brewers game from 84.
Yeah.
So, two quick things. There used to be a rule in the American League that you could not begin a new inning after 1 in the morning. So that's why the game was suspended and resumed the next day. And Tom Seaver, the Hall of Famer, came to the Sox late in his career. He was supposed to start the next night, so they had him start where the game was being picked up. He got the win in that game, the 25-inning game, and then he got the win in the regular schedule.
Nice.
So
nice.
How cool is that?
Two wins in one day. Cool.
Two wins in one day. So just a, you know, a little something for the effort. Happy to jump on with you, John.
Oh, and love to have you on. This is the kind of insight you get from Harry Tynewitz, ladies and gentlemen. And you'll hear him who's on with you?
The Mark Carmen at the Carm.
Yeah, you guys are terrific. So that's 4 to 7 on Saturday?
Yeah, 4 to 7 tomorrow from the Blackhawk Convention. And it should be great. Looking forward to it.
Nice to talk to you, Harry. Thanks for calling in, man.
My pleasure, John. I'm listening.
I can tell, and I appreciate that. You're going to play The Bright Side with us in a little bit?
Let's do it.
So here's what we do, and we used to do it right now. Actually, we'll take a break in about 5 minutes, and then we'll do The Bright Side. But I'll say, Ryan, what's your bright side? And you'll tell us something in your world that's making you feel good, making you smile. It can be a big thing, like my son's coming home from Afghanistan, or it could be, hey, it's a Friday, I'm cooking hot dogs tonight. Whatever it is that's making you smile.
Hot dogs do sound good, but all right, sounds good, I'll play.
Do you know what your bright side's going to be already?
Let me think about it.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. Well, I'm the host of this segment, and a lot of times I go, I don't know what my bright side is. I think that's a worthwhile exercise. If nothing comes to mind, it behooves all of us to pause and think for a minute. What do I have to be happy about? And then embrace that moment. Feel that, think that, know that, be that. And if it's a chore, all the better that you generate that. Find a way to remember that. It doesn't all suck. There's some good things in your life.
And the good things can't be at the expense of someone else. That's the key, right?
Kind of. I mean, although to be honest with you, the only rule we have about the bright side is that I don't judge your bright side. So if, for instance, you say, I'm happy for hot dogs and I hate hot dogs, I'm not going to sit there and say you shouldn't be happy about hot dogs. Whatever it is that's making you happy, so be it. I'm glad you're happy.
Sounds good.
Big or small. We'll do the bright side in about 5 minutes. By the way, this is kind of a bittersweet. It most certainly is a bittersweet. We mentioned earlier this week that Mike Mathis, for 25 years, the WGN radio traffic reporter, has passed away. His wake was last night, and several of us were there. I didn't see Steve Cochran. I know he was there, and I probably shouldn't start to click off all of the names that you recognize here from the radio station were there. So many of us were. But it was really nice to see Mike. It's Mike's son. So you had Mike Mathis, his son was there, Michael, his daughter, Marcia, his wife, Mary. They all were holding up really well. God, that's a grueling day for the families. Maybe we should rethink that. We've got to stand there for 6-7 hours sometimes and go through an endless line. But they were very generous with their thoughts and with their spirit, and they were all doing really well. We miss Mike Mathis here tremendously when he left, when he retired, and we all miss him now. Mike loved working at this radio station, and all of our shows were better because Mike was on them. And it was nice to see his family there yesterday. Brenda and I visited with him briefly. And then afterwards, several of us kind of gathered at a watering hole in the area. And as often happens after a wedding or a funeral, you all get together and visit some more. And it was just really nice to see some of the old members of the staff, and we all sat around and had a couple beers and some french fries and hamburgers, and Kathy O'Malley was in the little crew, and we all sat around and had a nice visit and fondly remembered Mike Mathis, as I know many of you do too. So thank you, Mike. Well done. God bless your family, and nice to see members of the gang again. Somebody called in a minute ago and said, hey, you got that wrong about the longest game in baseball history, 1984. Chicago White Sox went 25 innings. Here's a 26-inning game. What's the year on this? 1920. So I don't know if that counts as the same sort of Major League Baseball game as the White Sox in 1984, but I think it does. It was the Brooklyn Robins and the Boston Braves. And that one went 26 innings in front of 4,500 people at Braves Field in Boston. It says here, just to show you how times have changed, how long does a 26-inning game take? What was the duration of the game?
I'm going to say 6 hours.
How could it not be? I mean, that's a 9-inning game today. It was 3 hours and 50 minutes.
Wow.
They used to play the games a lot more quickly. They didn't step out of the box after every pitch to adjust their gloves.
The pitcher would pitch all the way through. You didn't have relief pitchers. You didn't have lefty-on-lefty matchups.
Right. The slow walk out to the mound. All right, now what are we going to do about this?
Instant replay.
You didn't have any of that. Really, in fact, I don't know any more than what I just told you, but I'll bet you the starting pitcher went into the 15th, 16th inning in these games, right? I mean, that's just the way it used to be. Yeah, stay out there. And, you know, they all got up and were able to take fluids the next day. Nobody died out there.
No commercial breaks.
The final score of the game was 1-1. This shows that it ended in a draw. In the 26th frame, the Brooklyn Robins put up another zero, and the Boston Braves in the bottom of the 26th put up zero, and then they all went home and had ice cream.
I bet you that the lights were the issue.
Oh, yeah, right. Well,
I bet they ran out of sunlight, right?
1920, I don't suppose they were playing under the lights. I don't know. 15 hits for the Braves, 9 for the Robins, 2 errors for each side, 1 run scored. So there is that. Hey, here's a couple of fun things to do. You got the Blackhawks convention. Lucky you if you got tickets to that. Also in Forest Park, the Music Fest gets underway this weekend. It's going on now through Sunday at Madison Street and Des Plaines Avenue in Forest Park. Cost you $5 to take in the music. They've got food, drink, carnival games, sidewalk sale. There's the Chicago Craft Beer Fest. Now that sounds good to me. Tomorrow and Sunday at Webster in Sheffield. Starts at 11:30 in the morning, drinks until 4 in the afternoon. $40. I guess you'll probably get one of those ribbons around your hand, one of those wristbands. More than 80 craft brews from over 40 brewers each afternoon. That's at Webster and Sheffield tomorrow and Sunday. They're doing the Green Built Home Tour. Nationally recognized green built homes created in an eco-conscious manner are on display at a number of locations. It costs you $5 to visit one of these houses, $20 for a set of 2 tickets to Unlimited. So if there's a couple of you, you might as well spend the $20. If you want to find out more, it's tomorrow and Sunday from 10 to 4. Go to greenbuilthometour.org. I'll do one more for you. Evanston has at the History Center the Ice Cream Social tomorrow at the Dawes House, 225 Greenwood. It's free. You get Andy's frozen custard, music, prizes. There's a magic show and more in Evanston tomorrow. Hey, it's 247. Shut me up. Call right now, 312-981-7200. It's time for The Bright Side. Call 312-981-7200 or text your Bright Side to that number. Let me hear from you now. The Bright Side is next. Here's our little song.
Some things in life are bad.
Got an open line.
They can really make you mad.
312.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
981.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle.
And 7200.
And this'll help.
It's our phone number here.
For the best.
All right, let's all sing the little song. Bang. We do this on Fridays.
Always look on the bright side.
All right, Ryan, the ball's in your court. Man in the newsroom said, I'll have a bright side for you. He's a man that doesn't always deal in pleasant things. He looks very busy over there, too. Do you have a bright side, Ryan? Hey, Mr. Burrow.
I'm sorry about that. Judy's asking me a question. What's up?
What's Judy doing? Doesn't she realize this is the bright side?
I don't know, man. There's always news going on here. Yes, it is the bright side.
What's your good news? Why are you smiling today, sir?
Well, Monday, my wife and I celebrated our 13th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank Woo-hoo. You. I think we celebrated with macaroni and cheese and chicken nuggets with the kids. So really special meal, you know?
I know. I believe 13 is the macaroni and cheese anniversary. You'll have a more expensive one down the road, but enjoy the mac and cheese.
Thank you. You must always
face the curtain. Elif Garris, what's your bright side?
My sister is turning 31 tomorrow.
Woohoo!
So we're celebrating. Enjoy it.
It's your life. I'm going to go see Dunkirk with the Petersons. That's my bright side. Always look on the bright side. Okay, all the phone lines are busy. Let's start with Vivian. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Viv?
Hi, John. Yeah, I'm on my way to see my grandson walk on stilts as a monster in the Chicago Children's Theater presentation of Where the Wild Things Are.
So your grandson is the monster in the presentation of Where the Wild Things Are. He'll be walking on stilts. Wow.
That's right.
Enjoy. When you're feeling in the dumps, stop be silly. This is Jill. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Jill?
Hi. I had eye surgery 35 days ago, and I'm healing nicely.
You sound great, Jill. It didn't affect your voice and maybe not your vision either, huh?
It's also, Monday was also my 13th anniversary, and coincidentally, we celebrate with mac and cheese as well.
Is this Ryan Burrow's wife?
No.
Wow. Well, now that's quite a coincidence. Hey, Nancy, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
We're on our way to Lake Shelbyville. Always look
on the bright side. Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hey, John, good afternoon. We're celebrating the wonderful people of Mount Prospect.
Oh, you guys got a big
downtown block party this weekend in downtown Mount Prospect.
Have a great weekend, Bill. Thanks for the call. Hey, Lee, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
2 weeks ago, I developed a severe infection, ended up in the hospital for a week, and I have a 10-day cruise to Alaska booked leaving next Wednesday. And this morning, I went in, and they pulled all the drains, and they told me I can go.
Whew. Oh, did you buy the insurance just in case?
No, I didn't.
Well, now I'm really glad for you. We've done that cruise. It's so much fun. Have you done Alaska before?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you're going to have a great time. You will see whales and dolphins jump right out your door. It's amazing.
Oh, wonderful.
Have a great time, Lee.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm glad you're going. You must always face the curtain with a bag. Let's go to line 8. Hey, Dorothy, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Dorothy?
I just made the most beautiful Portillo's chocolate cake with the fudge frosting.
Oh, man.
Yeah, for my husband's 70th birthday tomorrow.
Enjoy. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I forgot about mac and cheese. Always look
on the right side of life. Hey, Regina, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. I am very happy that I still have my mother, who's 94 years old, and that I'm able to take her to my cousin's wedding tomorrow.
Oh, great. Boy, I hope it doesn't rain. You guys have a good weekend, okay?
Thank you. Dance and sing.
When you're feeling... You can text, you can call 312-981-7200. This one says, John, my bright side is my oldest son turns 18 today, and he turned in his Eagle Scout project. Woohoo! John, bright side is I'm graduating Chinese medicine school in September. Hey, John, I'm from Skull Valley, Arizona. Tomorrow we'll be with my high school girlfriends from Roselle, Illinois for a day together after 40 years. Pick up another line. Greg, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling? What's your bright side, Greg?
I have a 45-year-old boat that I got for free. And I'm restoring it to take my grandkids fishing.
Oh, man. How long is that going to take, restoring the boat?
I hope to have it done by Labor Day.
Oh, man. What a great, fun project. Congrats.
Yeah, that's what people tell me. You need a project. So I got a project. Always look on the light
side of life. Hey, Aaron, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Aaron?
Well, my daughters don't know it yet, but next week we're surprising them with a trip to Disneyland.
Oh, wow. Sometimes that's as much fun for the parents as the kids, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm super excited.
Oh, how old are the girls?
8 and 4.
Have fun, Aaron. Have fun.
Thanks a lot. Look on the bright
side of life. Hey, Marge, this is John. What's your good news?
Hi, John. My bright news is our granddaughter and her softball team, the Elk Grove Village Heat Black, won the national championship yesterday.
No kidding. Did they play that around here? Where'd they play?
They were out in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Wow. Elk Grove Village, Heat Black, huh?
Yes, heat, like hot.
I get it. All right, Judy, it's your turn. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Judy?
Hi. After 40 years, I finally got my kitchen remodeled. They just finished this week. It's beautiful.
And the sad thing is they started 40 years ago, right?
Yes.
It just feels like that. Nice right. going, Judy. Have fun.
Thank you.
There's something you forgot. And that's to love and smile and dance and sing.
All right, let's talk to Casey. This is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Casey?
Well, one of them is that you're back on the radio.
Thank you.
Thanks. I had 2 years of people telling me that I had arthritis in my back and I couldn't get relieve of pain. Found out I had a 10-pound tumor on my spine, non-cancerous, and I survived a major surgery and I'm doing great.
You're able to stand up better now, too, I'll bet, huh?
I can actually bend, stand, and pick stuff up off the floor. It's
good
wonderful.
Grief. Casey, that's amazing. Wow.
I know.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, all good news. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
Hey, John, my bright side is my best friend's coming home from Ohio, and we're celebrating her 22nd birthday. John, this is Jerry. My bright side is my wife had breast surgery for cancer. Everything came out okay. Hey, John, I had the best parents in the world, and they are celebrating their 65th wedding anniversary together. Thanks for that text. All righty, 2:59. If you're calling in on the bright side, I'm sorry, we're going to clear the phones because we got to get out of the way. The news is next, and then after WGN Radio News, it's the Blackhawks Convention. Steve Cochran's out there, Dave Ennett's out there, Anna DeVlantis and Rokon ready to roll on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.